Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 147. Yeah, 147? Are we 147?
Yes, we just talked.
Okay. Like literally 3 seconds ago. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hi, I have ice cream.
And I have beer. And we are here to do like my favorite set of episodes of the year. It's, I love doing year-end lists and all that, and, you know, and what's the best and having that conversation. We're doing it a little different this year. Usually we just do one episode where we kind of give our top 10. We will have that to close out this year of Movie Dudes. But first up, we have this episode where we're going to do awards. We're going to have our own little Oscar show right here with some, I think, some fun categories. And some that I had some trouble filling out. My order is kind of random, almost the order that we came up with them in. I'm gonna save like best twist and best ending for the end of this list. I'm gonna move those down. But just as a warning to everyone listening, like, we are here to discuss these movies without holding back. It's the end of the year. You've had some time to check most of these out. So if you don't want to be spoiled, watch every movie that came out in the last year. Come back.
Or at least like the ones that we've
the big ones
on the show.
Yeah. I guess with that said, might as well get into it, Chris.
All right. I'm ready.
So for our first category, we're going to go with Best Actor.
Okay.
What'd you have there and why?
Wow. So I was not wowed by pretty much anybody's performance here. I mean, there are definitely some that I enjoyed. You know, Hugh Jackman and Logan. I think Mark Hamill's really great in The Last Jedi, but none of them were like, I wasn't like wowed by them. But one that kind of stuck out for me, and I don't know if it's mostly for, well, it's very much for what he does behind everything, but Andy Serkis is my best actor for War for Planet of the Apes, where he played Caesar. There's a lot that goes into that character.
Yeah.
So it's one that like just kind of kept bugging me, like, you know what? Yeah, that was real. It's a super impressive performance. All of the people that do the apes are super impressive, but he's kind of been the golden shining light of that series since the beginning.
He was a front runner for me, which is funny because we did not discuss this beforehand. Like he almost won it. I think that, you know, there are people who say, well, he's aided by digital effects, so you shouldn't be able to. I guess I would argue the flip side of that, which is he doesn't get recognized for what he's doing because of that. Like, because it's a digital character, I mean, this is an argument that goes back.
Yeah,
he's at least a decade now. But,
actor, but he does so much more than...
He's acting here. He's the lead.
Yeah.
And he is carrying a film as a talking ape, and he does, like, and it's a really good performance, and it's not just animation. I mean, the dude is acting full on, like, they mapped his face and everything, so, yeah, I ended up going in a different direction, but, I mean, that dude, he probably deserves an Oscar nomination. I doubt he'll get it, but, I mean, easily a front runner for me, so... I had him as my front runner. I also had Jeremy Renner in Wind River. I thought he was really good in that.
He was one that was on my list, yeah.
I instead went with a very showy, obvious performance because I really loved it, and that's James McAvoy for Split.
Okay.
And there's obvious reasons why he's getting the props here. The dude does, like, at least 4 or 5 different personalities in that fucking movie.
Yeah.
They're all like very distinct and very like cool. Like And I think it's impressive the way which he could kind of flip between them. Like, at least it seems that way in the movie, like flipping a switch.
Whether it's excellent editing on Shyamalan and his editing crew's part, or just McAvoy himself being able to flip that switch, but it's excellent. Like, he does an amazing job.
Yeah, I mean it's one of those like super obvious like let me show off performances, but and it's a year where for both best actor and best actress, I struggled to think of like a standout performance. You know what I mean? Like everybody was good in a lot of movies this year, but nothing was like, man, they blew me away. So I guess that's why I just kind of was like, well, James McAvoy was pretty fucking amazing in Split, so I went with that. That leads us right into our award for best actress, Chris.
All right, so there was one that immediately stuck out to me for this one, because she is the everything for this movie, and that's Carla Gugino for Game. It is her movie from start to finish, and it really, like, most of that takes place in a bed with her chained to it. So it has to rely on her. If she is not convincing, that movie fails. And for a movie that I've been waiting for years, and it is such a great adaptation of that book, but it all falls on her, and I thought she nailed it.
It's weird. I thought about her for this category, but I dismissed it because I was like, oh, the ending feels like a Lifetime movie, which is like has nothing to do with her, and she does carry the movie exactly as you say. So I don't know why I turned away from her so easily. Like she was not even my shortlist. My shortlist, I had Kristen Stewart for Personal Shopper. I just think she's really good, and she's good in it, despite the fact I didn't love the movie. And then I had, and I really loved this performance, which is Holly Hunter in The Big Sick. But she's kind of a, it's kind of a supporting performance. So I felt weird about giving it to her, and so I struggled, and I don't know why I didn't circle back to Gerald's Game, but I don't hate what I chose, and what I chose is Melanie Lynskey for "I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore." She's kind of carries that whole movie too, I think, and she's super likable and relatable, and she feels real. And she shows some range in it. Like she has to show some, you know, the movie itself is all over the fucking place. And she has to, you know, sometimes do comedic shit and sometimes do real emotional stuff. And I just walked away from that movie really loving her as a character. So I was like, it's kind of her movie, so I'm gonna give it to Melanie Lynskey.
Nice.
I guarantee you the Oscars will not be giving her, at least I think for both these categories, we're pretty safe in standing apart, I think, from the Oscars. I'm just noting down who you chose again. All right. So let's skip over the next two in my list because we're going to move those to the end. And I'm going to bring up, Chris, the award for best villain.
All right. There's a lot to look over here. Like, I mean,
There's some good shit.
I watch a lot of commercial movies. There's Spider-Man Homecoming, there was The Vulture, War for the Planet of the Apes, there was The Colonel. There's some good stuff out here. There's Kylo Ren in The Last Jedi, and Pennywise. Ton of great stuff. I'm going a little weird here. And my choice for best villain is Ernesto de la Cruz from Coco.
Okay, that's I would not have chosen that. I think he's good. I just wow, there's so many good villains this year.
It's one that, and I think that the next category might be some recency bias as well. But he's one that really kind of, like, stuck out of my head as just being, like, evil and sinister for his own gain. Where there's other ones that have great purpose behind them being villains. This guy is out just for himself. He's willing, he was willing to kill his grandson, which wasn't his grandson, but he was willing to kill him just to continue being the king of the underworld. And he's really evil. He's a really
Hey, I support you. It didn't even occur to me, because just because it was so much of what I had to choose from. That's an interesting choice. I like it.
So what do you got there, Jeff? I definitely threw a curveball.
Mine is one I think a lot of people might not know because they haven't seen the movie.
Okay.
I wrestled between. I really liked what Woody Harrelson did in War for the Planet of the Apes, and I really like Michael Keaton's villain because he's kind of normal in Spider-Man. He was just like you got why he was doing what he was doing, right?
Great
But
motivation for him there.
I'm sorry, say that again.
He had great motivation.
Yeah, like it's simple. Like I want money. And like Woody Harrelson, like I hated that motherfucker. I wanted him to get his comeuppance, real bad. But the villain I hated just as equally and made me sick to my stomach, and I thought was genuinely terrifying, was Officer Krauss, from the film Detroit, played by Will Poulter.
Okay. Agree
This.
talking about him being very, almost like the epitome of evil.
Yeah, like he's. It's weird because, like, he does make a comment early on in the movie where he's like, we are just trying to help these people in this neighborhood. So, like, they could have gone the route where, like, this guy thinks he's doing the right thing, but he's, really not. But, like, it's super obvious that, like, he basically tortures people for like a huge portion of this movie. It's like fucking funny games and shit. Like, holding them against the wall, screaming at them, telling them he's gonna kill them. And, reminds me a lot of this video that's been going around of this cop terrifying this kid until he fucking kills him. I don't know if you've seen this. It was like on the internet
This
recently. And
hotel video.
yes, yeah. It's almost like that, where it's like the dude is getting off on his power. He's enjoying what's going on here. Like, Tim, it's fun. Like, he's a slimy little fuck. Like, just not even just two-faced, like, three, four, five face. Like, he will act completely different in front of his superior officers and stuff like that. But, like, deep down, like, once you get him alone with somebody and he has authority over them, like, the mask comes off. And he just relishes in torturing people. And like Will Poulter, man, like this kid was not on my radar. Like he'd been in some stuff before that I was like familiar with, but holy shit, I was blown away by what he did with him. And just like one thing that really stuck with me and like what made it pop back in my head as I was thinking over best villain is like there's a part near the end where the film becomes like a courtroom drama for like the last 20 minutes. And there's a part where like they have a recess. And he's like outside smoking a cigarette, and he sees the people who have like accused him and like why he's on trial. And he just looks over at them and flashes a smile. Like, he's like, I know nothing's gonna happen to me. Like, look at you fucking guys. Like, this is my world, not yours, Yeah, like this villain, like that movie is a bit of a mess and it's way, way too long. Like, it needed to be cut by an hour, but I still recommend it, especially on video where it's not like the movie theater setting where you're just stuck in one spot for 3 hours. I do recommend checking out this film. I think it has a lot of important stuff in it, but I think one of the real high points is this evil cop villain in it. So yeah, that's what mine goes to. Coming up next, this is an easy pick for me. Best tearjerker.
Oh, so I had a pair here.
Okay.
The kind of and I we just talked about Coco and the recency bias maybe I had with that villain. This one is very recent. But that there were two scenes in The Last Jedi that kind of got me a little emotional. One was the scene where kind of Rose she's talking to Finn, and she basically lays out like how we should be approaching things. Like you shouldn't be fighting what you hate. You should be trying to save what you love. That was one of them. But there is another scene shortly after that, where Luke finally appears. He has showed up at the Resistance, and he walks over to his sister, and he has a little conversation there. And he hands her a pair of dice that are from the Falcon, and he kind of gives this like talk about how like no one's ever really gone. And I know it's not what they were going for, and we talked about this in our Star Wars movie, but having Carrie Fisher on screen and that being said, it just was such a powerful moment for me. And I know it was meant to signify like, hey, like, Ben Solo's not really gone, Han's not really gone. They're all there. They're still in your heart, but and like that's it kind of hit me that way too. You know what? She's not gone. Like her work's gonna live on, and we'll still be able to appreciate it that way. Yeah, we might not get new stuff from her, but it's still there. And for somebody that's been such a large part of like my life, being a Star Wars fan, like that was a huge thing. So.
It's so weird because like they did not write that scene with the intention of it having that outside meaning that it has now or whatever, they couldn't have anticipated the meaning of that scene when they wrote it, but now it's like, and it's weird because it didn't occur to me when I watched it. I don't know why, like now after you brought it up, I'm like, you can't help but notice that, like, and think about that. But I think maybe by that point I was just like caught up in what was happening in the plot and also being like checking my watch, like, when is this over?
A bit long.
And yeah, that was pretty close to the end. But like the other scene that you're talking about with Rose, like I get choked up just saying the line. Like I'm not even gonna attempt to say it here, but yeah, like that like hit me. I did not full on cry, but I was like, it hit me pretty good. Like it was the only thing in the movie. Like this is a movie where like fucking Luke essentially dies at the end, and that didn't get me. But fucking just her saying like, I don't even want to say it, but her saying like, this is why we fight or this is how we fight. I was like, damn, dude.
So it's such a great piece of dialogue.
But mine, like by a country mile ahead of either of those two moments, is the ending of Logan, dude. Like, it's so simple. Like, it's just the hero dies and his sidekick fucking cries over his grave. And it's just one little word of dialogue, daddy, or whatever. But, like, it fucking works and it hits with a fucking wallop for me. Like, I've told this story before and, throughout the year, but, like, when I went to go see it in the theater, I went to go see it with my friend, who I also went to go see Star Wars with. And I typically try not to cry with my bros at movies. Maybe that's a flaw between, like a social flaw between males. Maybe we should be more open and sharing with our feelings. I don't know. But like when I saw it in the theater, Logan, it was everything in me to keep from just like dying, dude. Like the worst part on top of it is you could hear the whole theater being like,
Everyone's
like
sobbing.
everyone is fucking crying at this ending. I managed to hold it in. Watched it again once it came out on Blu-ray, and I fucking lost it at the end. Like I did not hold back. I don't care if my girlfriend sees me cry, whatever. So, but yeah, like it works so fucking easily on me, and I think part of it is because it's a big swing. It's just like it's going for it, and it's super simple. Like there, it's not doing anything complex or interesting or complex idea. It's just like, damn, this motherfucker just died, you know.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, I think what makes it stronger is it's a kind of a small movie where most of the movie is developing this kind of reluctant relationship between the two. So that like, but like, so when that happens at the end, you're just like, God damn, dude, that fucking sucks. What were you going to say, Chris?
It's just a great scene. I mean,
yeah.
Like that whole, the way that whole character arc worked, driving up to him making the decision to go and save the runaways there, and ultimately like the girl that's been modeled after him.
Oops. Yeah,
it's such a great piece.
And there's just something about like when two characters are put together and they like don't like each other, but like slowly their bond is, you know, like he does not want to be doing what he's doing, and she's like, who the fuck is this guy?
Right.
But I think it makes that bond so much stronger once they do start to like, you know, they show up to care for each other. Anyways, I've gone on too long about it, but like easily, like, dude, it's probably one of the strongest tearjerker scenes in the last couple of years. Next category I kind of struggled with because it was like a really weird summer, and that's best summer movie.
Yeah, it was a really weird summer. There were a bunch of movies I was really looking forward to when the summer was approaching, but they turned out to be duds.
What are you thinking of, like, with that? Because I liked a lot of movies I saw. It's just like some of the ones I saw that I loved were like It Comes at Night. That's not a summer movie.
Yeah. I mean, like, maybe not duds, but, like, I didn't come out of Spider-Man Homecoming, like, loving it.
Which is weird, funny. Neither of us did, because I think more I think about it, I like it more. But
I like Homecoming. I think it's a decent movie, but I wasn't like, wow, that was fucking amazing. Like it certainly, and this is, you know, the product of it being the sixth Spider-Man movie in like 15 years. But like, it just wasn't special, and that's kind of what you want out of a big summer blockbuster movie is something that's special. And I don't think Guardians of the Galaxy hit that. I don't think Pirates hit that. You know, Baby Driver didn't really hit that for me. That was one that seemed like maybe it would.
Yeah.
Even like the Fate of the Furious didn't work for me. Like, but one movie kind of did, and that was War for Planet of the Apes.
Ooh. Goddamn.
It was the only one really that I was like, you know what? No, this hit all the notes of,
you know what?
What I need for a summer action movie, summer blockbuster movie, at middle July, kind of it hits the note right for the time frame, and it did what, like, it was one of those like, this trailer looks awesome, I'm really looking forward to it. I go to the movie and I'm like, this was fucking what I wanted, and it was an excellent film to close out that trilogy.
Yeah, and it's like, it's a total popcorn movie. It's a total summer movie. I mean, it's exactly what it is. It's action, you know, big budget, special effects, but it's like also better than that. Like, it's better than, it's like how Dark Knight was, where it's like, it's totally in that category, but it's on another fucking level from the rest of them, you know? You just changed my vote. I'm going with War for the Planet of the Apes.
Nice.
I don't know why it didn't occur to me as a summer movie, but it was. So I was originally struggling. Like, I was like, yeah, maybe Baby Driver. But it's like the same thing as what you said, where it's like it didn't quite live up to what I wanted out of it. Like, especially that ending was fucking lame, I thought.
Yeah.
I initially had Wonder Woman, dude. Like, I've really come around on that movie. And it is like the prototypical fucking summer like superhero movie. But no, dude, you're right. It's War for the Planet of the Apes, for sure. Easy segue, I guess, into go into best action scene.
Okay. Best action scene. I bounced around a bit with this one. There were, you know,
there's a lot of good ones, but I did not bounce around at all.
I mean, there's No Man's Land and Wonder Woman. There's a couple. Mm-hmm. There's a great scene in Logan, outside the farmhouse.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that really kind of stuck out to me was the final shootout in Wind River.
It's pretty great. Yeah, nice. Yeah, it's so sudden and out of nowhere, and everyone's getting blown. Like it's, I described it as like Tarantino. You know, it's kind of like that.
It escalates too. Like, starts out pretty calm, and then like it just starts ramping up, and then Elizabeth Olsen goes and she on the door to kind of get the guy to come out of the trailer because they're going to inspect the trailer, and when that shotgun blast goes, like everything fucking goes haywire.
Yes,
it's nuts from that then on out.
Yeah, that's a good one, dude. I didn't really think of that because, like, for me, as soon as I wrote down that category, one scene jumped into mind, and I'm like, yeah, that has to be it. It stuck with me all year, and I knew immediately as I was watching it that I was watching a great action scene, and that's the limo getaway from Logan.
Yeah, that's scene, yeah.
Just, like, I said it the first time I saw the movie. It was like the way he, like, hooks onto the fence, like, he's driving the fucking limo. He rams through a fence and he's like dragging this fucking barbed wire fence across the field or whatever. And he takes out a dude on a fucking motorcycle with it. And I think starts dragging him or like, it's just incredibly well done, like chase scene and shit. Like, and that movie as a whole kind of deserves props for its action. Just like going R rated with it, like showing him fucking slicing dudes up. But yeah, I really love that. Like, that was like the first like big fucking moment in the movie too. It was like, damn, like, all right. So yeah, that's it for me. I guess kind of a natural next topic as well is best gore / violence.
There's only one option for, and like the entire movie is not really gory, but there's one scene in this entire year that is so and it is the degloving scene from Gerald's Game. Thinking about it is kind of making me want to vomit a little bit, but
it's super impressive though on like a technical level, like on an artistry level. Like there's art to doing that shit and like you believe it, you know what I mean? Like, and you could see like the fucking muscle and shit slipping off the bone, like, oh
god.
So this might surprise you a little bit, but my choice for this category, I actually struggled with quite a bit. Like, this was tough. It was between Gerald's Game and Brawl in Cell Block 99.
Okay. It's a movie I've not seen yet, so.
Oh, shit. Well, like, dude, the last 30 minutes or so of that film, at least, are just incredibly violent and gory, like, almost like a horror movie. Like, you're talking, like, he steps on it, like, he smashes the dude's face in the ground, steps on the back of the dude's head, drags the dude's face across the ground, and when he lifts him up, the dude's fucking face is gone, and all it's there is, like, a skeleton. Like, just shit like that for, like, a half hour in a prison brawl, like, fight scene. Like, it's fucking crazy. But, Chris, I went with Gerald's Game because, and you kind of mentioned this, I'm going for it because of its single use of gore that will become iconic. So it's just like, there's one scene in the movie. Anyone that sees that movie is going to talk about that one scene.
Yeah.
And it's going to become iconic because of that. So you're right. It has to be Gerald's Game. Like, as much, I thought about it over and over, and I'm like, I'm kind of more lukewarm on Gerald's Game as I was when I first saw it, but that fucking degloving scene, holy fuck. So, I think that's our first unanimous one of the night.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a, and I just watched this last night, and it did actually make an award here, but I watched Mother last night. And
okay.
there is a scene towards the end of that movie where Jennifer Lawrence has had a baby, and this baby is being carried through, like, by by like the fans. I don't know what the fuck they were. I'm still so confused on many aspects of that movie, but they're carrying this baby like crowd surfing style, and they snap its neck, and then they eat it. That was, it was something that ran through my head when I was thinking about this category, but Gerald's Game was the one.
Yeah, I just felt like by the time the gore came in Mother, it was just, I was kind of like, fuck this movie. I don't know. I by the way, I mean, we could talk about it. Did you like it?
No. Yeah. Well, it's a 3. Like, it's right down the middle for me. It's a weird fucking film. We'll be talking about it later in this award ceremony. So,
all right. Up next, we have a category that should be added to the Oscars: Best Horror Movie.
All right. So I think it was actually a pretty decent year for horror.
I think you and I saw some different horror as well. Like, I don't know if we saw a lot of the same ones, so
I don't know.
I would agree with you though.
Yeah, I saw a lot of decent horror, I think. You know, like, there was stuff in Annabelle Creation that was really good. There, like, I like 1922 was pretty good. Like, it's a different type of horror film, but that had some interesting stuff going on. It Babysitter was an interesting horror comedy. Gerald's Game, Split, Get Out even, but
I know where you're going with this. Oh no.
I had to go big, and it's a movie that, like, I just enjoyed so much, and it was it. Like,
I can't blame you for that. Like, I totally get it. You know,
it's a super satisfying movie. I understand that some people are like, oh well, it's not a scary horror film, but there are scary aspects to that movie. And I think just as a film, like, it is an enjoyable film to watch with terrifying moments, like terrifying themes all the way through. So,
and something we don't really get much, which is kind of a big budget, like big deal horror movie. And if that's what that looks like, I'm pretty okay with it.
Yep.
My choice is at the very opposite end of the spectrum, in that, like, I don't know what the budget for this movie was, but I'd be surprised if it was more than like $3 million. And that is The Transfiguration.
Okay.
And it's winning over, like, It Comes at Night, Get Out. I even just considered Detroit for this category. But The Transfiguration is like this movie that had no hype, that I just randomly saw on Netflix. And I think, I'm sure it's still there probably. It's a real small indie horror movie, but like, it's about this fucking little kid. Like, he's like 13 years old who thinks he's a vampire. And like, right from the very opening scene of the film, he's doing horrible things. He's like killing people. And then it kind of feels like, you know, Let the Right One In, where he like befriends this girl, and you think it's gonna kind of go in that direction. And there is kind of like a romance between him and this girl, but the most fascinating part of this for me was like this kind of smart loner kid who thinks he's a vampire, and he's like killing people. And this is like set in the real world, so you're like, he's probably just a disturbed kid, and like, he's like obsessed with horror movies and shit, and he's just using that as a way to like express himself. But what really made it stick with me is at the end, you're left with the idea that, like, what if he actually was a vampire? And it has a really, I think, cool ending. Like, he does something heroic, and gets his ass killed. But he dies because he gets like a silver bullet in his heart. So you're like, well, maybe he was who he thought he was. Anyways, I don't know. I thought it was like, it's just that whole idea of Maybe he's a vampire, maybe he's not, but like either way you read it is disturbing. I don't stuck with me all year, so that's why I go with the Transfiguration.
Nice. I believe I have added that to my my Netflix queue. I remember you talking about it, and it sounded.
Yeah. And I maybe make it sound a little boring. Maybe it is a little boring, but like I don't know. It just stuck with me. And I found it more interesting than all the other ones, which like I think it comes out It Comes at Night is like pretty interesting, and Get Out is great. So and maybe I just wanna like highlight this movie more because everyone has seen Get Out. No one's seen The Transfiguration. And changing gears completely, and we go to best comedy, Chris.
All right, so where I thought horror was a strong point for the year, I'm not so sure that, and it might just come down to the type of movies I watched this year. I was not like super impressed with the comedies I watched, but one was fucking awesome, and that's The Big Sick. I don't know if you want to call that a comedy or like a dramedy, but.
It's a romantic comedy, dude, through and through.
I think it's fantastic. It's like Ray Romano and is it Holly Hunter? Like
Yes.
they're great. I love their interaction. It's this kid who is, he's Pakistani, and he's like kind of he wants to be an American. Like he just wants to be normal in the world where he lives, but he is being pulled by. Both his family and by this comatose girl
Yeah.
and being drawn into her life and seeing how things operate there. And I think it's great.
Yeah, and just I really love, I think it takes up like a pretty decent amount of the movie, is like the relationship he develops with her parents while she's in a coma and technically broke up with him. It's weird. It's like a very awkward and I think understandably like adversarial relationship starting off. Like I get why the parents don't want him there, and I get the clash that they have or whatever, but like I don't know, I just really love that aspect of the movie. To like to them to get to the point where like he's like spending a night with the fucking dad. The dad's saying super awkward things to him about sex as they're trying to go to sleep. Like, there's just some great moments in that movie. It's like a pitch perfect romantic comedy, dude. Like, Kumail Nanjiani, like, I think his favorite movie is Four Weddings and a Funeral. Like, the dude really fucking loves that genre. And he's telling a story about his own life. Like, I just think The Big Sick is a fucking great movie. Which I think we're gonna be talking about more, but it's also my best comedy of the year. And it was like you said, there's no contest. There was nothing really going up against it for me.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, like looking at my list, there's not another comedy on my list until like 15, and I wouldn't even consider that like anywhere near it. Like, it's just no, it blows everything else away.
Let's see. This next one, I don't know if I ever came up with a final answer, so I don't know. Maybe you'll be able to sway me. Most 2017 movie.
All right, this one was hard.
And we did not define it beyond that, but the idea I think makes sense. It's like what is the movie that defines our year, like out, the year of 2017, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so there was a lot of stuff going on this year, but one of the big things was the kind of outing of sexual harassers,
Yeah.
the Me Too campaign. And there was a movie over the summer that I saw that I was kind of looking forward to. I thought it was pretty cool at the time. I didn't love it. Like, it didn't live up to everything I liked about it, but I thought it was decent. And that was Baby Driver. And then
No.
And then Kevin Spacey was revealed to be
dirtbag. I see where you're going with this, and I love it.
And
that defines 2017. You think something is good, and you find out it's fucking rotten.
Yeah, and I mean, it's really a shame because I do think that movie has some great aspects to it, but I don't know if I can ever look at that movie the same way. It's so weird, right? Like, on one hand, I want to be like, you know, the art is one thing, and Kevin Spacey is a phenomenal actor. Like, there's no taking that away from him. But also knowing what I know about him now, it makes it really hard to look at that work and be like, I can get behind this. Like, I can't. Like, there's too much going on now, and I don't know if I'll ever be able to watch Baby Driver and be like, enjoy it in the same way I did when I saw it, knowing what I know.
That's a super good pick. Look, like, my stance on all this shit is, I'm not gonna like limit what I watch based on it. You know, like, I'm not gonna like burn my copy of American Beauty or whatever. I'll probably never watch it again, but I'm still not gonna like,
yeah,
say I'm not gonna watch it, but.
I'm not throwing my Keurig off my deck, like.
But you're right, and it's just like I said. It's just, I don't know, like a meta level. It's like almost a great pick because you know, yeah, you think like this thing that you thought was cool, you find out no, everything is actually bad, and also men are fucking pigs. So it's like,
yeah.
It's very 2017 pick, Chris. Good job. I'm backing you for Baby All right. Driver. Up next, I have coolest moment.
Whew, coolest moment. So this one was, it was up there for best action scene.
Yeah.
And I felt I needed to give it, it's due here, but, No Man's Land, when she walks up onto and out onto the battlefield. Like, she was like, no, we're going to fucking do the right thing. It really was. It was the coolest fucking thing all year. It's something that stuck with me. It's such an emotional moment. And from there, like, you are on board with Diana Prince no matter what. Like, it's awesome.
My pick was... It was no contest. Like, I didn't even think of another one. It was No Man's Land for Wonder Woman also. Like, dude, the first time I saw that movie, I was not impressed with that movie, but I was very impressed with that scene. The second time I saw that movie, I fucking cried at that scene. Like, it's like an emotional release where you're just like, hey, man, someone's just going to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. Like, and on top of it, it's just like the soaring music. And her just standing there taking all their fucking shit, like holding up her fucking shield and like sparks are fucking flying off of it and shit. Like,
it's wonderfully choreographed. It looks beautiful.
And it's just like, it's a soaring feeling through the whole thing, like to the point where at the very end, she like flies up to the top of this fucking church. Like, I love that fucking scene, dude. That scene is one of the it's the coolest scene of the year. So we're in total agreement again there. Cool. I did not think we'd have so much. We've had like three or four now, I think, where yeah. We kind of agree. Up next, this is a really hard one for me, but I let you go because you've been doing good on this, I think, this year, and that's worst movie. You don't watch a lot of the drivel, the dreck. Yeah,
I watched a lot of shit. and there's one movie. I mean, I watched some shit. I watched Underworld, Blood Wars. I've seen the Transformers the last night. Resident Evil Final Chapter. Rings. Leatherface. Yeah. Like, you kept some shit.
And by the way, how bad is that Leatherface?
Oh, it's bad. It's
yeah.
There's about 10 minutes of pretty cool slasher film in it, but whew, that is a bad movie. Oh, and it's super depressing because it's by the directors of one of my favorite modern horror films, Inside, which is
The French film?
the French one where the pregnant chick.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, I can't believe they directed a Texas Chainsaw sequel that barely got released. That's amazing. Because
And
that film was impressive.
yeah, that was a really good horror film. And then I don't know what happened. Like Toby Hooper was attached to, he was producing this prior to his death. I don't know if maybe his lack of involvement after his death or something had problems with it. But yeah, Leatherface is a shit show of a film. It doesn't even really touch on. There's like 20 minutes of the Sawyers, which is the cannibal, crazy family. Everything else is like this Bonnie and Clyde 80 minutes chase sequence. It's so shitty. I would not watch that.
I'm going to watch it because I'm a Texas Chainsaw freak. Like, dude, I've seen all of them. Like, even Matthew McConaughey one. Like, is it worse than that?
Yeah, there's things in that Matthew McConaughey one that are like, wow.
So weird that they're fucking awesome.
Like it works. Like nothing
Yeah.
in this. Like I wasn't sold on any of this. And also I'm not sold on who becomes fucking Leatherface. So there's that. But that is not the worst film I've seen this year. That goes to the Amityville Exorcism, which is the only film I've given a one all year long. I am trying to draw what I remember about that movie, but it is super low budget. There are things about it that remind me of a movie that Jeff and I both watched called Five Across the Eyes.
Oh, God.
Like somebody had a camera and was just filming shit, and they had some people that aren't really actors, but maybe were friends of the people making student film or whatever. And somehow it got released out, like it was direct to video, but somehow it made it there.
Is
And
it like found footage style? Like, are the people holding cameras?
no, it's just
Oh.
he's holding a fucking camera, but it is
Oh,
shots and it is really bad.
God.
There's like some terrible special effects where like one scene, like the girl is like she's like laying in the bed, and then the next scene, like it just like cuts, like a hard cut, but it's not meant to be a cut. It's meant to be like, she's still in the bed. Oh, now she's a demon. But it's like so badly edited that it's just like you could see the cut happen. And
God.
it's like she was in the bed and then she was not in the bed and then she's in the bed with makeup on, and it's a really badly put together movie. So yeah, Amityville Exorcism is my worst movie of the year. The only movie I gave a one all year on this show, so.
I'm just gonna be a total cheat, and I can't like answer this category honestly with a movie I've seen because I don't think I've seen a worse movie, like, if that makes any sense. Like,
Yeah.
I don't like a movie like Personal Shopper, which I did not care for. I don't want to single out as worst
Yeah.
because it's not like terrible, it's just I didn't like it as much as a lot of other people.
Well, that's why like this category is always really hard. Like even when we do our game show and it's like worst game, like I hate doing that because I mean, I saw a lot of movies. You saw a lot of movies, but
Yeah.
I saw 60 films this year from 2017. That is not even a dent in what was released this year, though.
Yeah.
So
Well, I mean, that makes it just, I mean, you could say the same thing for best movie. It's just for me, like, I try to watch movies I think are I'm interested in. Like, I'll watch some stuff where I'm like, yeah, we'll see.
right. Like you'll watch something like Leatherface because you're a horror fan, you're a Texas Chainsaw fan. You'll watch like that, what was it, Curse of Chucky or whatever, because it's
Yeah, it's like I didn't love that Curse of Chucky, but I don't. You know what? It's funny is like my girlfriend, for whatever reason, claims she likes the Transformers movies, Okay. And I got that one from Netflix, but she's just been busy with work lately, so we haven't been able to watch it, so I sent it back. If I had watched Transformers, I probably would have chose that. But I'm gonna have a different choice, and it's gonna also be purely speculative. Because I've not seen it, but like just based on the trailer, I guarantee I think this is fucking terrible. As Boss Baby, is that what it's called?
Oh, really? That was nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Animated Movie.
I guarantee you I wouldn't like it. I don't care. Like, it looked bad.
Sure.
I don't know if
It looked terrible, but
I almost wanted to defer to you and say fucking Amityville, but again, I said, I just basically don't have a choice. So I'm going to say Boss Baby
that's
because
fair.
fuck Boss Baby. I don't care if it's actually good. Fuck that shit.
Yeah, that's cool.
And, let's put a little nuance on this equation here and say for the next category, what's your biggest disappointment?
This one,
Is easy.
yeah, I think that, well,
I
I'm
think it's
not sure
easy.
where you're going, but it's an
I know
easy,
where I'm going.
it's certainly an easier one for me to push on, because there are movies that I get really excited for. And there was one that was in my mind for this, circled around, and that was The Dark Tower.
Yes.
That is not where I'm going with this, though.
Okay.
I'm gonna go with Mother.
It's pretty disappointing.
Yeah, like I mean, don't get me wrong. I think The Dark Tower is a disappointing movie, but Mother is from a director that I have great respect for. I love most of his work. It is starring an actress that I have great admiration for. It has a cast outside of her that I think is phenomenal. It has an idea and premise that I think is actually really cool. And it is a movie that I started and I had no idea what the fuck was going on. The end, I was still fucking confused by what the fuck was going on, even though I knew what the director was intending.
Like, going in though, had you like listened to podcasts or like knew what was going to happen?
So I didn't know about the baby scene, but
Okay.
I knew the theme that Aronofsky was going for. I
Yeah.
knew, like, there were two themes that he was going for, and one was that Jennifer Lawrence and the Jennifer Lawrence was Mother Nature, and the house was kind of, Earth, with Javier Bardem, her husband, being like this godlike creature. And everybody else in the movie being humanity and basically like stealing her resources and destroying everything about her. I understood that and I see the correlations there.
Doesn't make it good.
It did not like, and then the other one was that he implied that the baby was Jesus and he it to be this Catholic this like very literal adaptation of the Catholic Eucharist where Jesus dies for our sins and then Catholics like consume his body and blood in their religious ceremony. And I don't know, that scene just made me sick. Like it was gross. And
I thought it was weak, dude. I guess I don't know. It didn't hit me. I was like,
it
this
didn't
isn't.
like that. Well, the baby neck snapping was
I guess.
that was like holy shit.
Yeah.
And them eating the baby was like, oh, fucking gross. Like, when you mix infanticide and cannibalism, like it's pretty fucked up, but nothing about like the movie as a whole was just super disappointing, super down. I was like, it goes
It
off.
doesn't feel like real characters or people. It feels like a bad dream.
No, yeah, it's a terrible dream. Like nothing seems real. Seems
And
she's on like some crazy trip. Like she's taking that yellow powder and she's on some crazy drug trip, and maybe I should have been doing drugs to watch the movie.
I mean, I'm not against the idea of an experimental this kind of art house film that's meant to feel like a bad dream. But even still, it felt flat to me a little bit. And this is a guy who directed Requiem for a Dream, which is, it's got real, like, momentum to it, you know? It's got spark, like.
And I mean, he won an Oscar for Black Swan. Like, that's a movie I love. Like,
that's one I don't love, but it's way better than this. Way better than this, dude.
I don't, yeah. Nothing about this movie. Like, when I heard, like, Darren Aronofsky got Jennifer Lawrence to be in, he's making a fucking horror movie. It's like, holy shit, this sounds awesome. And the trailer, actually, it was a good, decent horror trailer, I thought.
Yes, it sells it as, like, this awesome, really edgy horror movie. Yeah. Like,
and then to go into
it's that,
to get this weird, fucked up, like, nonsensical film, it's a super huge disappointment. Like, I mean, there was a chance that The Dark Tower was going to be bad. I knew that going in.
Yeah.
I expect Darren Aronofsky to, like, shit the bed here.
Dude, you might have moved me over again. Because despite the fact I have not seen The Dark Tower, I will, I guess, at some point, but, like, I have no interest in it anymore.
That's fair.
The reason I felt still strong about it, even though I have not seen the movie, is the fact that The Dark Tower was a disappointment at all to people, like, in general, is a failure. Like, I don't even have to see it to know that's disappointing that people did not like it, you know?
Yeah.
But, at the, like, you make a strong, strong argument for Mother, like, where I agree with 100% of what you're saying. And that's a movie I've seen. And, yeah, like you said, I expect more from him. So I'm going with you. I'm switching over to Mother.
All right.
Biggest surprise, Chris.
All right. The biggest surprise for me was a movie called Slight.
God damn it. You're, like, coming up with some good. All right. I'm sorry.
I don't know if I was really surprised by a lot of films, but I saw this trailer back in, I don't know, maybe February or so. I didn't get to see it until much later in the year, but the trailer looked awesome. It was like this, like, kind of inner city, realistic take on, you know, sci-fi fantasy, where this kid basically, he makes himself Iron Man.
Yeah.
And like a street magician, so it's like a lot of sleight of hand, but he also, like, makes this, like, fucking industrial strength battery that he inserts into himself at,
like, into his, like, veins and shit, yeah. Or in his arm or whatever, like, and so it's like, it's cool cuz he's doing, like, magic type shit, but they make it feel like it's based in science, you know what I mean? Like this could really happen, you know.
Yeah, he's not, like, reading your mind. Like, yeah, he is doing, like, he does some card tricks and shit, but, like, he's, like, hovering metal and shit off the ground. And, like, but then he gets in, like, there's this great story outside of just, like,
yeah,
magic, where he gets involved with this local drug dealer, and it all culminates, like, it all comes together with him using, like, his science-based Iron Man power to, like, take this fucker down. It's,
mm-hmm.
It's, I loved it. It was a super huge surprise. It's a small budget movie. It kind of came out of nowhere for me. And I was like, yeah, this is really, really good. Like, I'm glad I saw it.
That's a great pick, dude. Like, and it's a great pick, especially because nobody talks about it. I've seen it, and I forgot to even think of that for this whole fucking, like, this whole award show. I'm like, I did not think of Slight once, but when I saw it, I loved it. I think it's a great movie. Like, you know, they do, like, a lot of great things with, like, no budget. And I just love how they make it feel real. Like, this could be something that happens, like, even though he's just doing totally cool magic shit. Like, yeah, that movie's awesome. My choice is I don't feel at home in this world anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it came out of nowhere. Like, I had not heard anything about it, and then, oh, the guy from Green Room and fucking Blue Ruin has written and directed a movie that has like an awesome title, like this awesome long title, and awesome like premise. So yeah, I fucking loved it. And we'll be talking about it more next episode. So,
Okay.
but yeah, just the fact that that kind of came out of nowhere.
It did. Like, it was like, I
Yeah.
remember the trailer came out on Netflix and then it was just there. Like,
And it's like another, it's one of those ones that like kind of got buried by Netflix and like people don't talk about because like it's so deep into the menus on that on Netflix that nobody knows about it.
right.
But it's there for you to watch. It's a Netflix film, so. All right, Chris, this is gonna be a fun category. Best Stephen King adaptation.
There were a few.
There was a lot, and they were almost all good.
The one that I wish I had gotten to see was Mr. Mercedes.
Yeah.
So that unfortunately doesn't, I don't have a hole for that here because I did not see it.
And I did not allow it for myself since it's TV, so I'm just like, all right, it doesn't count.
Yeah, that there were a bunch of ones that
Yeah.
out. It was a big year for Stephen King, and there's a lot of good ones, but I kind of have to go with the big one, and I'm gonna go with it. I think, yes, it's half an adaptation of his book, but it's an awesome adaptation, an awesome half an adaptation, I guess. So, it is a movie that not only got, the core of what Stephen King did in that book, but it is a movie that brought horror to the mainstream like few films have in recent years. Like, I mean, it's a movie that made $700 million at the box office. Like, that's not a small sum of money for a horror film.
Well, I'm not gonna stick my nose up at it, but for me, I think like a lot of Stephen King's best adaptations come from stuff that were really short, so that like they get to kind of breathe a little bit in the film adaptation. And 1922 was a pretty thin story stretched across about like 120 pages. And I thought the film adaptation of it was like just beautiful and like cinematography looked great. I liked the performances. I really liked Thomas Jane in it as the main character. It's not like a 5-star horror film or anything, but like I just kind of loved it the most for those reasons and like this like southern kind of gothic feel. Just that rural shit, I think, is creepy.
That's
But
another
also,
thing that I think
yeah.
has been so great about these adaptations, though, is they all feel and look so different.
And they're, yeah, they're like kind of tailored for what the material is, too. You know, like it should be a big theater movie. Like, and 1922 should be a movie that's about almost 90 minutes, you know. Yeah, I just 1922, like 1922 for me is like just edging out those other ones. You know, I really like Gerald's Game and it, so, but I think it's just the southern thing and it kind of feels like, you know, like a western or whatever that I kind of dug it more.
Ah, it's a great choice.
Yeah. Next is a fun category. I'm interested to hear what you have to say. I think you'll like my pick. And that is coolest slash most badass character.
So I struggled a little bit with this one at first, and then I looked high up on my list, and I was like, Wolverine's really fucking awesome. But
That's really good.
Laura, his daughter, X-23,
Ah!
so much better. She's fucking wild. She's unhinged. She doesn't know how to really control her powers yet. Which just kind of gives you this like raw, like what Wolverine would be like if he was, untamed, like as first tame as Wolverine can be. Laura just, she doesn't have that control that he has at this point in his life, and she's fucking awesome. Like I love her. I think as a character, she works really well against Logan himself. And it worked for me, so.
That's a wonderful pick. Like, I love it. I thought we were going to go with Logan, but like that's even better. Mine, I think you'll find it amusing. I like it. It's the pilot from Dunkirk, played by Tom Hardy.
Okay.
Strong, silent type.
Yeah. Very silent.
He gets the mission done. He fucking lands and gets killed. It's fucking great.
He might be the most likable character too. Maybe because he doesn't really.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like you just get to fill him in with whatever you want, you know?
Right.
And he's obviously a total badass. Like that last shot of him walking off from the fucking plane on fire, like.
Enemy territory and.
He's a man of few words, but I liked him. Next one, I don't know if you're going to be mad at me with my pick, but it's best credits / post-credit scene.
So I kind of knew where you were going with this one.
I think you probably do.
It's not the one I chose, and I struggled. Like I do like the scene I think you're going to go with. But I really like. I honestly, when I suggested this category, it's like, there's always like some great best after during credits. And I started looking them over, and it was a weak year for him, honestly.
Yeah,
there were a few. One which I think you'll say in a minute. If you don't, we could talk about it. But for me, it was Kong Skull Island. I think it's maybe during the credits. It's the after credit scene where they kind of reveal all the other monsters like Mothra and and we know that, like, I mean, this is a movie that takes place in the world of Godzilla, like the film from a few years ago. So we know that Kong and Godzilla are both existing here, and they are going to be bringing these monsters together. And I was like, that's fucking awesome. Like, we're going to get a big budget King Kong versus Godzilla movie. It doesn't get much crazier than that. So
that's your pick then?
Yeah.
I think that's a good pick, but also you reminded me of what my other best action scene was that I thought of well after I made my pick, which was the beginning of that movie, dude, when they fucking get to fucking Skull Island. Like, holy shit, that shit was awesome.
When they're coming in with the helicopters.
Yeah, he like kills the whole fucking cast of the movie. Like, I was like, okay, I thought that was gonna be my main guy. Never mind. And he just tears shit up. He's just like throwing fucking helicopters out of the air and shit. I'm like, that was like, they didn't hold back at all. They're like, this is what you want out of this, right? I'm like, yes, this is what I want.
You want a giant ape destroying shit.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's kind of a shame that, like, I don't know how much more recognition that film is going to get on this show, but, like, that movie's fun despite being really dumb.
Yep. It's a stupid movie that is 100% what you want out of it.
Yeah, like that director knew what he was doing. Like, I can't wait to see what he does next. Mine is, I'm guessing that you guess it. It's Split.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it kind of counts because it comes right after it shows the title card of Split. So it's, I consider that credits. And I mean, we'll talk about it more, but I mean, for obvious reasons. Best score, Chris.
Best score. This one was I mean, it wasn't hard.
Okay.
I have a soft spot, but honestly, like, when I looked outside of what I chose here, I wasn't like nothing really stuck out to me.
It wasn't a strong year for me.
So there was one choice for me, and it's John Williams' score for The Last Jedi. Like, it's something I will listen to again. It's not the, I mean, it's a super safe choice because his music is almost always good and it's familiar. So
for sure. I mean,
but, yeah, I think it was a weak year for like original scores. Like nothing really, like there's no themes that really stick out to me.
Well, like, I'm agreeing with you 100%. I really struggled with this category because like a lot of years I could tell you, dude, like last year, La La Land by far.
Sure.
I mean, that's an easy one. Like, but, It Follows or Kill Bill, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. There's certain movies where you see them and you're like, the music was half of the fucking movie.
Right. And I mean, Coco had really good music, I think.
But yeah.
It wasn't something that it was like, oh, like, I mean, that whole movie is background music. But even there, I wasn't like, this is like amazing music. Yeah, nothing like really jumped out at me.
So I was kind of leaning towards War for the Planet of the Apes.
Okay.
And on top of it, the guy that did that movie, did the score for that movie, he had quite a year this last year. He, let's say last year and a half, he did fucking Doctor Strange, Rogue One, Spider-Man Homecoming, War for Planet of the Apes, and Coco. So, but I ultimately decided on something else. After a lot, like I struggled with it, and then once it clicked with me, I'm like, yes, absolutely, because that's my jam, that's my type of fucking music, and that's the score / soundtrack for Good Time. It's kind of like synthesizer shit, as well as like a fucking like weird ass, really quiet song featuring Iggy Pop at the end, like in the end credits.
Mm-hmm.
And Iggy Pop sounds super old, like I'm on the verge of death, like motherfucking like Johnny Cash in his later days, or
it's like really gravelly voice sound.
Yeah, who else was I thinking of, like where it's just like goddamn, it's like super impressive because of how old he sounds. I can't even think of the other person I was thinking of, but anyways, actually, I have like a real short clip I'll play, if you can hear it, of the soundtrack. And if this comes out terrible, I'm sorry. So yeah, I don't know if you can hear that, but it's like obviously my type of shit.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Absolutely. And like I said, the song that plays over the end credits is pretty good as well. So I don't think Good Time was a film that 100% came together, but that score is pretty fucking good. Best trailer, Chris.
It. That first It trailer.
Really? That's a good one. I actually didn't think of that, but definitely with the appetite.
Yeah. It was one where you were still going like, I hope this film's good, but that looks really good.
Yeah, like what was cool about it is to kind of have some confirmation at least of the quality level. We were like, well, at least they're putting the production values in this. If it's, you know, it might not be as good as you hope it will be, but like that looks like a great fucking 80s film, you know, like, and luckily it did end up being good, but yeah, that was a good trailer. And the clown was pretty creepy, and he was pretty, ended up being pretty creepy in the movie.
Yes. Pennywise is he's a creeper.
My best trailer, and it's maybe because I'm a sucker for Johnny Cash, and that's Logan.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember that trailer.
Yes, that is a fantastic trailer.
It's just, it's fucking epic. It kind of like runs through the whole movie, so that's maybe like one thing I would knock against it. But like, I don't know, it's not too spoilery or whatever. And just yeah, the way that music plays over it, like, I think I'm just a sucker for that song. But you could just tell, like, man, this movie looks, like, fucking good and almost, like, artistic and shit. Like, and it ended up being, I think, one of the best movies of the year for sure. So, Yeah, I'm going with Logan for best trailer.
That's a great trailer. Great choice there.
Best documentary.
This is one I do not have an answer for, because
Okay.
I dropped out all 60 of the films that I saw that came out this year, and not a single one of them was a documentary. I did see some documentaries this year, but none of them were from this year. So I think
Okay.
it was a weak year for me. I mean, I'm not a huge documentary fan, but
I don't know, like maybe there's stuff out there I haven't seen. Like there's stuff like there's a documentary called 11/8/16, which I would definitely like to see, but it's not available in any easy format. About election night last year. I'm like, I don't know, what is that? I looked at the description of it and it's like 22 different filmmakers across the country who are following different people on election night. I'm like, that sounds interesting, yeah, I did not see a ton of the ones I saw did not blow me away. I actually tried to cram for this test by trying to watch some of the ones from this year in the last week or so. And like for instance, like last night I watched that fucking one on Netflix called Jim and Andy, The Great Beyond, I think it's called.
okay.
Have you seen the trailer for that?
I don't think so.
It is about Jim Carrey and how he prepared for the role to play Andy Kaufman in Man on the Moon.
Okay.
The movie is like comprised of behind the scenes footage from Man on the Moon, as well as mostly an interview with Jim Carrey talking about him fucking self for 2 hours. And it's supposed to be kind of about how like he went so like dive deep and went to full character actor mode, like whatever, where he's just like, I am always Andy Kaufman, and that's how he got his performance out of it. And it's kind of about how like the thin line between genius and madness and all this. But like, and that was a lot of people like that's one a lot of people were like kicking around as one of the better documentaries this year. And I'm just like, he comes off as an asshole. Like he comes off as someone you wouldn't want to work with. Fuck him.
Kind of like Tommy Lee Jones. He doesn't want to work with him. Thinks he's a fool.
He doesn't want to work with Jim Carrey.
No, I think Jim Carrey's the one that actually said this, but back when they did Batman Forever, Tommy Lee Jones was he was Two-Face and Jim Carrey was the Riddler.
Yeah.
And Jim Carrey went up and he wanted to introduce himself to him and like, hey, like, great fan. He's like, I don't suffer fools. Like walked away from them.
I was listening to another podcast where someone was like, you know what a lot of good actors do? When the cameras start rolling, they act. They don't have to like be that person all the fucking time.
Right.
And like I get it, like Daniel Day-Lewis does that, but I don't think he acts like a total asshole to people. Like the way Jim Carrey was acting to people on the set of this movie was like throwing water at them and just being like a total dickhead. And we're like, dude, we're supposed to be all professionals here.
It's almost like he used the excuse of I'm playing Andy Kaufman to be an asshole to everybody.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. Like, I get it. Like, I get the impulse to do that. But, like, he just comes off like a douche. And even, like, the modern Jim Carrey who's being interviewed for it, where he's like, he sounds like this ultra hippy dippy motherfucker. And I'm a liberal, and I'm like, you sound like you're so full of fucking horse shit half the time. He's like, where's, like, they're like, tell us about how this story all started. He's like, where does this story start? I wish there was no beginning and there was no end. And you're just like, shut up. Yeah. Anyways, that's not my pick for best documentary, but like, I'm just saying, that was one of the,
That
that was one of them where I was like, I didn't think that was that good. But I'm gonna go with one I did see actually within the last week, and I'll explain why I am choosing it. It's called Whose Streets, and it's about the protests and shit that erupted in Ferguson after the innocent shooting.
okay.
And the main reason I like it is because, I mean, it's a topic I care about, so obviously then I'm gonna be more interested in it, but like. My favorite type of documentaries are the ones where it's just like people who have a fucking camera following something that's happening. It's not like a talking head interview or recreations. It's just, hey, here's we cut together a film out of shit that people shot with their cameras or whatever, or like a director at least shot like following people around, right? As shit happened, and that's what this is. It follows from the beginning of that movement, like that was kind of like the beginning of the Black Lives Matter movement, and it shows how it just started from a community, like 10 people being like, "This is bullshit. I just saw him kill that fucking kid, and the kid had his hands up," and everyone's just started coming out of their buildings, and like it didn't stop from there. It like kept going, and it built into a movement, and these cameras captured that as it fucking was happening, you know. Then there's some stunning scenes in the movie. Like there's one scene where the cops are telling everyone, "Go back to your homes. Like you have to go back to your homes." They're like doing it through the bullhorn or whatever you call that thing. And these people, they like go back to their homes and they're standing in their yard, like they're in their fenced-in yard, and they're holding their hands up and they're like, they're still screaming, "Go to your fucking homes." They're like, "We are at our homes. This is our property." And the motherfuckers started shooting fucking like tear gas at him and shit. I was just like, "This is America? Like, what the fuck?" So yeah, I don't think it was a very strong year for the category, but I think Whose Streets was a pretty strong documentary.
Okay. Nice. I'll watch that.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, I'm sure you could probably rent it digitally or whatever. I'd say it's worth a rental. Like, it's pretty interesting to watch this movement evolve. It almost feels like it's out of a movie where it's like there's 10 people, and next thing you know, there's 100, and next thing you know, there's 1,000, right? Like, but anyways, I hope that documentary category is stronger next year because usually I at least have one that I'm very passionate about. Next up, we have Best Dialogue, Chris.
Best dialogue.
And I thought of this category, I wanted to say best screenplay, but I'm like, I don't actually read the screenplay. I think that category is based off of what you hear of the dialogue in the movie, and people go, "That's the best screenplay."
Yeah.
So, best dialogue, Chris.
So this one might be a little weird since there's only like two people in the entire movie. But I'm gonna go with Gerald's game here. I thought the dialogue back and forth, well, I guess it's two. There's her head and then and her husband. I thought the dialogue between her psyche and her though was fantastic. The Big Sick was another one that was really, really close up on this one, but I was really taken in by the script for Gerald's game. The dialogue there, I thought they captured everything kind of perfectly, so.
I like both those choices. I'd probably put Big Sick above it, but for me, I think it's pretty easy. It was pretty easy for me. Was Wind River. Like I think that every line kind of crackled in that one. Like it feels like very like I'm gonna write smart dialogue, but I don't care. Like when it's that good, I kind of fucking loved it.
I know you really love some of the dialogue in that movie too. Like,
I was like quoting shit. I mean, am I wrong? It's pretty
oh,
fucking
there's some
dialogue.
great lines in there, so.
Before we get to best twist and best ending, I wanted to throw two outsider categories, and I include them because like they're kind of in the realm, but they're not film. That is first up, Chris, best TV show.
I don't think I watched a lot of new TV this year. I'm sure I did, but nothing like really rang out to me. I missed some of the big stuff. Like I have not watched Stranger Things season two yet. I haven't seen The Punisher or The Defenders or was that Iron Fist came out this year? I didn't see that either.
I haven't watched any of those Marvel shows because fuck that.
Like I.
And by the way, don't rush for Stranger Things. There's nothing. You've already seen it.
But that like nothing really like jumped out at me like on out of Netflix. I mean, I watched some of the penis documentary.
That was a pretty good one, dude.
Yeah, like that one seems funny, but the only one that I sat all the way through was Game of Thrones. And super satisfied with what they did this season. So I know it's like a chicken shit choice, but I like where they're going. I'm super upset that we have to wait almost another 18 months before we're going to get more Game of Thrones, but and the end of Game of Thrones at that, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's too far off. But yeah, I get what people say about it feeling a little fan fictiony, even though I have not read the books, but I get what they're saying about that. But I found it superbly entertaining as well. I really enjoyed Game of Thrones. It would have been probably mine as well had I not seen Master of None season two. You gotta check that out, Chris. It's like, you like comedy.
Yeah, and
It's fucking great.
I like I've drawn a blank on the star, but I like him from Parks and Rec. He's
Aziz Ansari.
and I, his I've seen his comedy specials. Like I like him a lot.
He's better in this than either of those. I'll tell you that. He is fucking, this is him writing from the heart, and it's super funny. There's lots of experimental episodes, just doing different things, but also still funny. It's just a lot of funny shit, but a lot of heart. Master of None, dude, is real high up there on best thing out of anything this year for me. So, you should definitely check out. You haven't even seen season one, have you?
No, I have it on my list. It's not.
Oh, fucking yeah, get to that. You'll like it right away. You'll like it probably in the first episode, and they're all like 22 minutes long. So, up next, the other outsider category, best podcast, Chris.
So I didn't know where you were going with this one.
Just whatever podcast you like the best this year, I guess. It doesn't, I guess, didn't have to be new. I didn't specify, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so yeah, I wasn't sure if you were going for like best movie podcast or
No, just
talking
your
straight
favorite podcast of the year.
up. There's one that you guys turned me on to, but Lore, which also a TV show I did watch, but doesn't quite hit the same notes that the podcast does. That's something that like I've really got into. I love Aaron Mankey's voice. I know some people don't, but it just has this great kind of monotone delivery of these horrific stories. So that was one you guys, like you, Pete, had kind of turned me on to over the course of this year, and it quickly became one of my favorites. So as one that like as a new show that I listened to this year, I know it's not a new podcast, but as a new show that I listened to this year. That one's excellent.
Well, and I had new content this year, so I it totally counts. For me, it's gonna be like a super, I guess, obvious choice, but it really is great, and that is S Town.
Was a good one.
It almost felt like this great kind of southern novel about a guy, just like a guy and what makes him tick, and what was his life about. And it's kind of, even though it's super focused on one person, kind of exploring universal themes as well. I just found it super interesting. I love the twists and turns that it took. It's great. It starts off, you think it's a murder mystery, but then you find out, no, it's not that at all.
Something completely different. It's so weird.
It's just like Serial that became before it. It kind of expanded what the genre could be, what a podcast could be. And here it was like we could just tell an interesting story about a person, what their life meant. Really good. I mean, there's lots of podcasts I love, but that was definitely this big breakout for this year. So I guess that's an easy pick. from.
And speaking of Serial, like, I mean, I listened to S-Town this year too, but speaking of Serial, like, you guys kind of turned me on to that this year. And
Yeah.
I really love that first season of Serial. The second season, less so.
I like season two.
I like it. I just, it didn't have like the mystery to me as much, I guess.
Doesn't have the mystery, but it's more like, hey, we're gonna present both sides of a view, and what do you think of it? You know what I mean? Like, the facts are known. There's no disputing what the facts are, but it's going, what do you think? Like,
He deserted. Like,
yeah.
I mean,
And
he has stated to doing so as well, so.
like, I don't have easy thoughts about it where I'm like, he's a dickhead. But I'm also like, dude, what are we gonna do? Punish this guy forever for what he did? Like, it sucks. Don't know. So,
And by deserting, he fucked himself more than anything else. Like,
yeah, wait, yeah, like,
kidnapped and held hostage for 4 years, and
and not an American prison, like, you know, I understand the impulse to be like, fuck that guy, you know, but it's like when you hear all facts, you're just kind of like, yeah, fuck that guy, but I don't want to see him die in prison or something, like that's fucked up. But yeah, season one is a masterpiece, like that changed the whole medium, like that changed podcasting. All right, I guess the last two categories for this episode, Chris.
yep.
Best twist.
Whew. So I thought that this one was pretty easy for me.
Super easy. I hope it.
But normally they're like, the year is like filled with awesome twist endings or twisting films, and I don't think it was that great a year for that, except for maybe this one. There was stuff like in Life where it has a twist, but the twist is like, oh, that's fucked up. Like, not like, wow, like, this is the one.
Yeah.
It actually get for me, it gave me a wow moment right at the end, and that split the first wow moment comes after James McAvoy turns into the monster and he is confronting, and I'm drawing a blank name, but he's confronting her, he's going to kill her, and he realizes that she is damaged in the same way that he is. And I was like, holy shit, like, that's fucked up. Like, he moved from there, and then
And then
crazier twist, like, after everything ends, where you find out that Shyamalan is making his own connected universe, and this ties into a film from, oh God, was it like 15 years ago,
yeah.
Unbreakable, which is, in my mind, his best work.
Yes.
And it's like, it is an excellent comic book superhero movie that's like non-conformist, I guess, in many ways. And this ties into that, in that, and now I believe he's filmed Glass. I believe Glass,
Yeah, I think it's coming out soon, dude.
like, so he is, not only has like he come back, but he has brought us like
Glory, everything I've ever wanted.
crazy ass shit. So yeah, it was a crazy twist. I kind of like it a lot.
We'll have to look it up after this, but I want to say, like, Glass is supposed to come out soon. Like,
So I just looked it up. It is in post-production, but it has not come out until 2019, so we still got a little bit of a way.
okay, so then I might be. I remember hearing it was going to come out like in January, just like split. Maybe I'm wrong.
So
Maybe it's.
it might be a year off from
Yeah, okay, yeah.
January 2000.
But all I know is that to find out that, yeah, exactly everything you said, except the only thing I would probably add to that is like, yeah, this was basically the Empire Strikes Back of a trilogy. Like, you found out at the end that this is like the part two where you find the rise of the other guy, and then the third one's going to be I'm presumably like the clash between them, also involving Mr. Glass or whatever. Like, I don't know, dude. Like, I've never had a moment like that in the theater where I lost my goddamn mind. I was just like, whoa! Like, in this, I'm like, whoa, my God! Like, people were just like, no one around me was doing that, so I'm sure they're just like, okay, what's wrong with this guy? Like, and also, I don't get it. What does Bruce Willis mean? But, like you said, Unbreakable, to me, is the best Shyamalan film. Like, I love that movie. Like, possible top 10 of all time, right? Mm-hmm. And then to get a sequel to it, but not know that there was a sequel till you're in the credits of the fucking film, like, oh my God, that was a fucking brain melter, dude.
And,
like,
and to go, like, I mean, you're talking Unbreakable is 2000, and then
far back. Like,
I think from there, like, I mean, Signs is, I don't love Signs, but it's okay. The Village is kind of I personally think The Village is a piece of shit, but I know some people are like, oh, it's okay. And then after that, like, I think everything after The Village
pretty bad. Was
garbage up until The Visit. So, yeah. Like, it goes for, like, over a decade of releasing garbage and shit. And then he comes out with The Visit, which was, like, this cool, low-budget horror, you know, found footage horror film, and then he brings Split along, and you're like, hey, he's back. And then he's like, not only is he back, but he's making a connected universe based on a movie that he made 17 years ago.
Like, and also this one with a low budget, like, and he blew it out of the park, and it's a great movie before that twist. Yeah. Like, it's a good thriller before that. Like,
good, it's thriller, a great fucking performances.
Film. Yeah.
It's really well done.
So we're in total agreement there as well. For best ending, we will not be, because you have not seen mine. But what is yours?
So I kind of bounced around on a couple here, but it came back to one that you mentioned earlier in this show, and that's Logan. Like, I think for me, I've been watching these X-Men movies with Hugh Jackman since they started coming out back, like, almost 20 years ago. 17 years ago was when that first one came out, back in 2000, and he has been the core of that the entire time. And this is a beautiful send off to not just like that era, but to this character that so many people kind of love on film, and such an iconic character too, like, over the last 17 years, like,
yeah,
nobody else is, like, I mean, To me, Hugh Jackman is Wolverine, right? Like, I know they'll recast him. There'll be a different Wolverine once Disney gets a hold of Fox. And there probably is going to be a different Wolverine anyway. Like even if Fox were to hold on to their stuff, they'd probably recast Wolverine. He's one of the most popular, you know, X-Men ever, one of the most popular superheroes. But to me, like, Hugh Jackman is Wolverine. And this was the best send-off, the best ending you could give that character in this era of comic book movies. So,
yeah, great film with, as you know, I already said, great ending.
Yep.
But for me, the best ending of the year doesn't get much better than this. It's Brawl in Cell Block 99. And after Vince Vaughn has completed his mission in that film, which is to kill fucking everybody, his wife fucking snipes the dude that forced him to kill everyone in prison. And then in prison, after he kills everybody, he's like sitting there waiting to be killed by the fucking guards in the prison. And the very final shot is his head exploding from a fucking gunshot, and that cuts to black. Like, so it doesn't get any more like hardcore and not fucking around than that. It's fucking great. It's just like, How many movies can you think of off the top of your head that end with a fucking headshot and it comes to black? Like, it's fucking great. I had two runner-ups, though. One was A Ghost Story, which is the whole time that movie, he's, like, trying to dig this note that his wife left in the wall out. So she, like, found a crack in the wall, slipped a little note in there, and painted over it. And he, as a ghost, is, like, trying to dig this note out. And at the very end of the movie, well, for one, you find out at the end of the movie that, like, at the beginning of the movie, before he died, they heard some, like, weird shit knock around their house, and, like, what was that? Well, you found out at the end that, as a ghost, he, like, you could travel all through time as a ghost, so, like, the ghost he heard in his house when he was alive was himself haunting him when he was dead. which is, like, if you think about that, like, if that's a real thing that could happen, like, so let's say every time you hear a creepy sound in your house, it's, like, you from after you die. Weird. Yeah. So that was a cool twist. And then the very, like, final shot and, like, ending of that movie is, like, he finally gets the, like, he scrapes the paint off and he gets the fucking note out that his wife left in the wall. But you don't get to see what it says. Like, you just see him read it. And then the fucking ghost sheet falls to the ground, and he finally like crossed over to the other side or whatever. So like whatever was in the note was enough to let him like let go of his life or whatever. And yeah, like super powerful ending. I thought like on top of a movie that like there's a perfect example. Like I bitch about like artsy fartsy movies a lot, and A Ghost Story is a total art house movie, but I think it has mainstream appeal. Like, if you give it a chance, it's actually really good. So, yeah, anyways, that almost won for me. The other one was Spider-Man Homecoming. Like, just the ending where she's like, what the fuck?
That is good.
I mean, that's like, and I think it like goes straight into like the Ramones or something, and like these really colorful credits. Like, it's just kind of perfect. So yeah, I think we hit every category there, and
yeah, we did all 25.
And I thought it was some good categories. Maybe we'll have some different ones next year, but I liked most of the ones we had this year, so I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of them come back.
Yeah, they were good. They were fun.
But we will be back in the next episode with our top 10 films of the year. Get excited.
I'm ready.
Movie dudes.